When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 495, Top 100 Games of All Time, number 60 to number 51. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. All right, friends, join us at the table as we get into the lower digits. The more exquisite taste of tabletop gaming, number 60 to number 51, Anthony.
We are almost halfway there.
What?
In 60 to 90 minutes, we will be halfway there.
Then we'll cheer. There'll be a whole thing about it. So.
Oh, will there? Okay, I got to remember that, because in 60 to 90 minutes, I might forget.
We can't afford special sound effects, so you do have to do the cheering.
Yeah. Just a little background info. We record this at night, so sometimes by the end of the 90 minutes, I'm like, okay, what were we doing? Time to go.
Friday night on top of everything else. So.
Yeah. Chris is like, no, fireworks. Like, oh, right, fireworks.
Fireworks, do the thing.
Be excited.
Pull it up. There's a lot of people at the table. They're all listening. We got to do a thing, man. Got to make it. Got to pop it. Pop.
Yeah. I get off of this, like, whenever time we were done recording, like 11 o'clock. And my wife, sometimes she's asleep, and sometimes she's awake, but she's always like, or you're like, good night, and you know, we're yawning, we're sleepy, and then I get up and leave the room, and I'm like wide awake for like an hour and a half. Like, this process, I get so wired.
Yeah. this is not a wind down podcast. This is a wind up podcast for sure.
Right. Yeah, like more and more excited as it goes on. And then like at the end, I'm like, now I'm up till 1 a.m. It's a good thing it's Friday, because
I think we need to survey our listeners out there. Like, is this a gym podcast for you? Is this a driving podcast for you? Is this like a walk fitness thing? Or is this like in the background while you're working? Like, do we need to bring it up, down, or what? Like, what's happening for you?
That's a good question. Yeah, I found myself having different podcasts for different things. Like, there's one podcast I will only listen to when I'm making dinner. Oh, wow. Because I often laugh at it, and I'm very self-conscious if I'm laughing at the gym. Or like laughing while walking by myself down the street. So I'm like, no. In the kitchen, the family's around, they don't care.
Sure. Well, no need to worry. No laughs here, my friend.
No. We're hilarious. They know.
Oh, sure. All right. So we got a great list for you this week. Anthony, I think, as it's started to become the thing, out of nowhere, without any preparation whatsoever. Vibes? You have a vibe this week?
I got big heavy game vibes. And like a little bit of sub vibe of like mashup.
Okay.
Yeah, like there's a solid theme throughout mine of like things that are kind of smushed together. But also just big, heavy, chunky, brainy things. So and that's not the whole rest of my list. There are other games in there, but like this particular chunk, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of thinking in here to be done.
Yeah, mine certainly is really, and recent events has kind of proven this. These are very solid medium games that when I'm going to a game group and I'm like, what am I going to bring with me? Like, usually it's like, hey, it's the new hotness. I'll throw the new hotness in the bag. And then I'm like, and what else? I think all of these games here is one of these games are the travel game. Like, hey, we can play the new hotness, or this very solid game that came out a couple of years ago, but is still like a very solid game. So, and I've played a couple of these recently too. So Very excited to talk about them.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I've started looking at that. Like, what is the theme this week? Like, my theme next week is very clear. I'm excited about that one.
Oh, okay.
I was looking ahead. I'm like, oh, these are all very thematic together. This is great.
So. Yeah, and you can and all of you listening out there, you can figure out like which 10 games do you want to, you know, if Anthony and I had separate tables, which table you go into, which library, which little mini library are you checking out? Because
Ooh, yeah,
it's a little competition. I'm just saying, it's a co-op competitive kind of situation.
All right, yeah, let's not survey people because I think yours might generally win for the medium bias.
So. Yeah, I think you got a little. Yeah, you definitely got a little lift. There's a little lift on your games necessary.
Yeah, yeah, this year especially.
It's a little weighty. It's a little on the weighty side.
For sure.
All right. Well, that being said, Anthony, let's get to the list. And why don't you start us off with your number 60?
All right. This is, I think, the heaviest game, actually. I'm going to start real heavy at the top of the list. But that's what I told you I was doing. So
you did.
Just deal with it.
3.96.
3.96. So number 60 on my list is Arkwright. This is from 2014, designed by Stefan Ristos, who we had previously talked about. I think we already talked about this.
We did.
We talked about this recently. So this is the designer of Gentis, famously.
Love
I think
it.
That people have actually played more often. And then Arkwright is like the big, heavy, meaty game that Ristos has made. It is a 4-5-8 on BoardGameGeek. It is upper like 50 in terms of complexity.
That's pretty heavy, man.
It is, and it is a very tight economic simulation. You are running a factory. You are hiring people to operate the factory. You're bringing in different goods that you'll produce in that factory, and the end result is all focused on one thing: having the most money. And the way you get that money is based on increasing the value of your shares and the number of those shares that you own. It has a lot of different ways to do that. Like, there's a lot of different ways to manage that money wise. Like, you're selling goods, obviously, but you can also ship those goods. You can trade those goods. But at the end of the day, you're just trying to increase the value of the shares and increase the number of shares that you have. There is so much interesting stuff going on in this game, you know, from how you build out your factories to automating out the workers, which feels bad every time I do it, even though it's just these, like, these little meeples and these little barrel type things. But you're like automating them away, and you're like, you start rooting for that, and you're like, oh man, capitalism sucks. These people are homeless now. You have your warehouses where you store goods. You have all these different things like where you can ship them out. And there's a short version of the game and a long version of the game, right? The game out of the box comes with like the Spinning Jenny version, which is like, they say short, it's still like 2 to 3 hours long, or like the full version of the game, which box is 4 hours. I would argue 5 to 6. It is a beast of an economic engine, but it is a wonderful, wonderful Euro underneath all that. And like, it's not 18xx-ish at all, but it gives the same vibe in terms of like, you have to have a clear system and process in place. And there's a ton of interaction with other players. My favorite game of this is like, we started at like 9. It took an hour to teach everybody how to play. We played till 3 in the morning, and at least 2 people at the table were like, if this does not end in the next 20 minutes, I'm flipping this table. And I'm like, winning. And they're like, I know, I want to go home. I have maxed out my shares in this game once, and I should have retired from there, but I still like it. That was the one play. So Arkwright, it's up there, those games that I play maybe once every year or two. But whatever I do, I'm like, man, this thing is brilliant. So number 60.
Sadly, I've never played this, and I know we've talked about this a bunch of times, and I don't remember why or how. The only thing I do remember about this game is the little, I guess, plastic people, and how many of them are actually on the board.
They're so
like
many.
They're like a little gray army, and I remember way back in the day, once this came out, there was a lot of, I guess, wood insert companies that were trying to or succeeded in making holders for all the people so that you could just like put it down on the table and all the people would be already set up.
I have one of those.
See?
It's great.
Yeah. Because otherwise, that's a lot of people to set up.
Yeah. Well, more importantly, they fall down.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
As you're setting them up, you're knocking them over. So it's really nice to be able to just drop them down. It's much faster.
It's its own dexterity game, I guess.
It is. Yes. This game, again, it took like an hour and a half to set it up and teach it. That's a lot. this goes into that category with like Twilight Imperium of like, make sure everybody watches the rules before they come over, and it'll save you all like 45 minutes. Okay. And I love it. I love it. It's great.
I'll take your word for it, man. I can't.
You could. You'd have fun.
Nah. All the little plastic people I have to set up. No.
I don't the funny thing about the little plastic people, too, is like they're not that... I mean, they're super important in the game. They run your factories, but they don't move. You buy them in and out of the labor market. That's important, but
sure,
it's not like they're workers you're placing. They just go into your factory, and then eventually they leave your factory.
Nice. All right. Well, I guess from one end to the other here, my number 60 is Castell from 2018. This is, I guess this is a folk tradition, a athletic folk tradition from the Catalana village in Catalonia. And I didn't know anything about it. I think maybe in the recesses of my mind and the side of my eye vision at some point, I must have seen this somewhat on TV. But this is a festival. This is part of a festival where people gather to build human towers of 8 to 10 people stacked on top of each other. Really amazing kind of organizational structure to build as high as possible these wonderful teams. So these different teams are in competition to create these structures out of nothing other than people. And they go around to different festivals and they recruit more people to build these towers. What other than, again, the just the spectacle of it all, the actual gameplay itself is so thematic because you are traveling through the different regions and you're picking up different performers as you go. What you're trying to do beyond picking up the performers is obviously create these massive towers. So what you do in the actual game is you take this performance that you pick up throughout the game and you attempt to build the different towers on the table using all of these little tiles of the different performers. So there's special abilities that come along that you can pick up in the game to benefit you. And then there's obviously goals of certain types and shapes of towers that you're trying to complete. And it's just a really fun, dynamic game. And I just love the idea that you're actually building up these towers of people. And it shows you the physical structure, how they go about it, the shapes and sizes of the people, the athleticism, the gymnastics ability here. It's just a fun, wonderfully beautiful game. And it's something that after playing it, I kept it, loved it, and get to the table a lot.
I remember playing this a couple times. Like the early came out, your review, I'm like, that sounds really cool. I tracked down a copy, I think a friend's copy, and we played it a bunch, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened. I thought I owned it
at
some point. I really thought I did. I remember going through, I literally have this memory from like July of going through my stuff when I was getting rid of it. I'm like, what happened to Castell? I don't see it anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just nowhere. I'm like,
oh, boy.
So it might be one I have to go track down again because I remember really enjoying this game a lot.
It's a fun game. I mean, just the idea of building the towers, your tower team on the table. The weight is like a 3.17. So it's heavy enough to be engaging for a lot of people, but it's not too heavy. It's certainly something you can get together. And again, it's very dynamic on the table as far as the different performers, how they come out, you know, different powers and the rondelles, action abilities. So a lot of fun. Check it out.
Cool. All right. Next up for me, I have not the lightest this week, but pretty close. Yet another Uwe Rosenberg game. This is one of the newest ones, but not the newest one. Oranienburger Canal. So this one came out via GameFound. So it shipped at the very end of last year from a campaign that ran in early 2023 via Spielworks. So not a lot of copies out in the wild, but they are making an updated version of this just called Canal. And then maybe even another version as well. But that's typically how it goes. So you get Spielworks releases a game, people either like it or they don't. If they do, someone else picks up the rights. But the idea of the game is fairly simple. You are building out these canals and different types of terrain on this player mat in front of you. And then you're placing cards within those spaces, and the cards themselves are going to score multiple possible ways based on how you close them in with the canals. There is the resource wheel like what you have in Glass Road. Keeps track of the five different types of resources that you can have. And it just becomes this really intricate puzzle where you are taking these different types of cards. You have a 3x4 grid, so you can have up to 12 cards. And then they all do different things. Like your action selection on your turn is very limited. You can get some resources, you can potentially move some stuff around, or you can get new cards. And then those cards let you do a bunch of other stuff. So you're building your own engine that is completely unique from your opponent. And creating your own potential action spaces that are going to trigger in the future based on the actions you take down the line. You may not even get to use all of them because it depends on when you put stuff out and how you put it out. It's not a pretty game. It looks like something that came out in like 1997. Terrible graphic design, but fantastic gameplay. It's only 1 to 2 players. It's one of those Uwe Rosenberg games that's really like targeted and streamlined for 1 to 2. I've played it at 2 once. I played it at solo like a couple dozen times at this point. So I'm mostly reviewing this as a solo game. But like a lot of his games, especially like the one-on-one games, it feels like solo either way. So you're really just kind of... The interaction here is getting the cards from the tableau or from the market. So Oranienburger Canal, it boils down a lot of the stuff. There's no worker placement here. There's no big sprawling stuff. There's no polyominoes. It's just getting the cards, that thing Uwe does so well, and building out your own tableau, and then kind of manipulating around that tableau with the resources that you have to activate stuff. So much fun. And yeah, it jumped way up on my list because of that. I really enjoyed it this year. Number 59, Oranienburger Canal.
And it's out of print.
It is out of print, but it's coming back. It's coming back.
All right.
It is. They're bringing a new version. I think it's just called Canal. Coming out sometime this year. They say this year. And then hopefully they'll have it at Essen and all the other times. But they are working on it. Yeah, I know. Like, if you want a copy of the one that was on GameFound, it's like $150.
Yeah.
So, and that's what happens with Spielwerks games when they get popular, because they only print what they print, and they're like, that's it, folks. And this did not have a lot of backers. But when it comes back, go get it.
Of course. Yeah, again, Uwe Rosenberg. So it's a good investment.
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's a really good game. Like, you know, some of his games feel like, this is like him doing a spin on this other thing, and it's fine, but I could get that other thing. This one feels unique, and that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. All right. This is a big box game from 2015. Of course, any version kind of will do. Number 59, Carson City, the big box. The reason why I say the big box is for a couple of reasons. It includes the expansions that are relatively, again, depending on your vibe, essential to the game. And it's a beautiful production that I believe was on Kickstarter way back in the day. We had a friend, Chris, and Chris was like, you need to back this. And I'm like, I barely know you, and I never played this game. He's like, you should back this because you'll regret it if you don't. And then I backed it because peer pressure. Kids, talk to an adult when someone tries to do that to you. Mm. And then I got to play it, obviously, and it was like, this is amazing. And of course, because way back in the day, and again, the big box is 2015, but the idea of worker placement was not new whatsoever. And you had a lot of these kind of dry, non-interactive Euros. They were a dime a dozen. They were all out there. They were good, but again, dry, non-interactive kind of Euros. Non-thematic in a lot of ways, too. Carson City kind of broke that mold in a lot of reasons. Basically, you're playing over 4 rounds, and you're way back in 1858 in Carson City, Nevada, and you're getting your team of cowboys together. You're trying to buy plots of land out there in the new town, and then you're building up those parcels of land with ranches, mines, saloons, banks, a whole bunch of other stuff. To do that, again, the worker placement comes into play, but because it's kind of like the Wild Wild West, other players can try to take over those land parcels with the buildings. And that means that you got to get personally involved and you might have a shootout. So that added this whole huge wrinkle to the game of actual conflict in what is generally a worker placement game with some economic engines. Because the parcels of land, once you put the actual buildings on them, each round they turn and they become more profitable. So they become more interesting to more players at the table. On top of which, there is a character selection at the start. That character is going to give you a particular special ability for that one round, and then it's going to go back to the tableau so other people can pick those things up. But you have cowboys, you have, you know, sheriff, you have skullmarm, you have miners, you have a lot of different special abilities that really open the game up to a lot of different ways to play. But eventually it comes down to the economic stuff that you can generate. But I've really enjoyed this game because that conflict action that comes into play can really break up sometimes what is just like someone built a very strong economic engine or got lucky in some way, shape, or form. Now you can kind of ride in there and ride them out of town a little bit. So Carson City, big box. But again, any Carson City will do. It's a great game.
I got to get this played. I owned a regular copy of this game a long time ago, and I just never played it. I got rid of it. But everything you describe about it, and it's been multiple times now you've described it.
Yes.
It's like, I should play this cowboy game with worker placement that I know I'm going to like. And then I just don't.
It's a very smart game. The original is back in, you know, I guess way back 2010. And it's crunchy. There's a solid crunch here, right? Like, surprisingly, it's a solid crunch. It's not just like, oh, you took your spot, I'm going to roll dice. Like, you got to figure out like where the different lands are, the mines are, the banks are, how you place things out. So like, there is a good brain burn here, but then there's also so thematically fun as far as employing the characters and the battles that go on. So yeah, a lot of great.
Great. All right. Next up for me, number 58, I have Dune Imperium. This came out in 2020. Almost at this exact same time of Lost Ruins of Arnak. And for a long time in my head, they were the same game.
For everybody, they were.
And I really liked Arnak, and I hadn't played Dune, and I was like, Arnak, great, I love it. So I didn't play this for a couple of years, honestly. I think the first time I played it was like early 2022. And the first time I played it, I was like, this is actually very good. Yes. But I don't know if it's doing quite enough to capture my attention, to like be different. As like other games have done the worker placement plus deck building thing. It's not new.
Nope.
But it was very streamlined, and it was very thematic. And the way that they use kind of the movie style and like the actor's vision without it just being photographs, I thought was interesting with the artwork. But what really got me down the rabbit hole on this game was the series of expansions that came out, right? And that's not to say it made the game, it made the game much better, but I think it just made me appreciate what the game was doing a lot more and get into it in a way that just really helped it rise up on my list. So specifically, it was the Rise of Ix expansion, which was the first one released in early 2022, I think January, February. I have since played the Immortality expansion. It's fine. I mean, it's good, but it did not do the same thing to my brain of like opening this thing up, giving me more unique decisions to make, like not simplifying, but just like flattening out some of the decision space in a way that's really made it more fascinating and engaging. It's a fantastic way to explore this universe without it being like a 9-hour experience, right? Like, you have Dune, the 1980s Dune that's been re-released, you know, in the Gale Force 9 edition, but it's the same game, which can either take 10 minutes or 13 hours, depending on how you play it.
And no in between.
There is no in between. The one time I played it, 10 minutes. Not fun. Whole big thing, getting 8 people together, and then it just ends almost immediately.
The rules explanation was longer than the gameplay.
It really was. Yeah, getting the person to like stop doing whatever they're doing in the kitchen and come sit down took longer than it took for us to finish the game. And then the, you know, Dune War for Arrakis, fantastic, but 2 players only and pretty long, like 2-3 hours. This is streamlined, takes like 1.5 hours. It has a very simple mechanic. Like, you have worker placement, but it's a limited number of workers. It has like combat is like boiled down to that little corner of the map. The worker placement element itself is boiled down to like this stretch of available spaces. And then even the deck building is not particularly complicated. These are the people behind Clank, so they know what they're doing with that mechanic. And you throw the Dune IP on top of that, and it just really captures everything so well. Now, I have not played Uprising. I know in your review and several other reviews, it's been like, this is very good, and this is a nice like lateral step for this game. I haven't played that, and someday I will, and maybe I'll like it more than this. But this by itself, like Dune Imperium with Rise of Ix, just one of my favorite worker placement games, period. And because the theme on top of it, it just rises this, you know, all the way up here, number 58 on my list.
Absolutely. And again, when I remember when they first announced this, this is Paul Denon, and he's the Clank guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, the Clank guy is making Dune. Come on, man.
Yeah,
I don't want a Clank guy doing Dune. Dune's like deep and like mystical and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Oh, Clank, man. And he made a really good game.
I just, it's so great that they were able to make a medium weight Dune game that's accessible. Yes. And it's like a perfect companion piece to that movie, which has somehow turned Dune into like a cultural force.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that I never thought would be possible. Like,
yes.
Love me that 80s movie, but I never thought it would be mainstream.
That's true.
And here we are.
No, and Mr. Beast loves this game, and he's
played
it in a tournament, and he won for some reason. Because I mean, it's like, oh, surprise, the genius is a genius. So, but it does play a lot of people. I've played this with a lot of people. People do make this their main game. The newer version of it is more or less the same, but just it's different enough that you could own both and not feel sad about it. And like you said, with the expansions, it certainly ups the game tremendously.
Yeah.
So yeah, 100% agree. Great game. All right. Next up for me, we're going to get smart here, Anthony. Number 58, Smartphone Inc. from 2018. you were there, man.
I was there.
This was one of our early PAX stories. Was this the first PAX that we went to?
This was
or the second PAX.
This was the second PAX. Okay. This was the year after, like, the first year we didn't realize what the first look section was.
Sure.
The second year, that's where we spent the whole time.
Yeah, this game and another game that you're going to talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
And the PAX teaching people were very helpful because we were looking for, like, hidden gems. And from a distance, this game looks like nothing, right? It's a very white-on-white board. There's some, you know, odd map continent out there in a very kind of, you know, sparse, you know, very technical kind of graphic design.
It's very and flat.
We're like, flat. And it's just like, oh, do I really want to do money things about the global smartphone market?
Right.
I don't know. That doesn't seem interesting. Is there an iPhone in this game? There's no iPhone in this game. People, there's no iPhone in this game. I don't know why we're playing this game, but like, all right, let's sit down and play this game. And I guess the first thing that strikes you about managing your large smartphone market is you're doing all the different steps as if, again, it's a simulation of being, you know, the CEO of this company, and each of the steps you take a large part in. What really kind of sold the game for me right off the bat was how you choose the actions. And I'm sure there's some games like this before, and I think there's been one or two after it, but Smartphone Inc. is kind of known for like these really odd, I don't know, polyominoes that you layer on top of each other, and then the symbols that are showing, and depending on the gameplay and stuff like that, the symbols that are not is a different story, but the symbols that are showing are the actions you're going to take. So there's only so many combinations. There's opportunities to gain other pieces to kind of upgrade and make your stuff a little more powerful. But basically, you have all the actions and the possibilities in front of you, but what are you going to focus on that particular round? Are you going to drop the cost of your phones so that they're cheaper and you can sell more of them? Are you going to try to raise more money? Are you going to go into R&D? Again, it took something that might have been in a lot of ways a very dry theme in a very dry looking game, and it was such a dramatic and dynamic gameplay. And we had so much fun playing it. And each round, different people were trying different tactics. And at the end, the game was very tight. And later, it was picked up because now people realize it was amazing. We realized at first it was amazing. And then they did the Kickstarter with this, you know, the extra stuff that goes along with it. And it was brilliant. And I don't know, Anthony, we raved about this for quite some time.
Oh, yeah. Like, it jumped straight into both of our top 100s after playing it like once. Like,
it's true.
And we spent months trying to track it down before they finally put it on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
This was on my list for a long time. It did not quite make the cut this time. And I remember being surprised, and I was like, ooh, do I want to find up space for Smartphone? And then like going through the whole list, I'm like, I guess it's like 101. I don't know. I couldn't find a spot for it. But I love this game. I think it's fantastic. Like, and take away everything else, take away the theme, all of it. just that action selection mechanic,
mm-hmm.
That alone makes it just amazing. Like that combined with like the additional pieces that you get, like the resources that come out of that and the way it like balances. Anytime you have to make a balancing decision for like what actions you're going to take, I love that in a game because it's ultimate agency and it affects everybody. And it's such a cool mechanic and it works really well here, both thematically and mechanically.
Yeah, a lot of the games that we're talking about this week, I think, as part of the general vibe, is they look like very scary Euro economic games. And you are like, dude, I'm not that guy. And I'm telling you, we sat down, we pulled out the rule book, and I think we had four players, Anthony, if I remember correctly.
We did, yeah.
And our friend Eddie was one of them, mm-hmm. and a new person. Forgive me, I can't remember his name. It's only been like 5 years.
Yeah, right.
And it was playable and it was streamlined and it was fun and it was legitimately fun and engaging. So if you haven't played it, you really should because it's a great game.
Yeah, break it down. All right. So next up for me, number 57, is an older game. This originally came out back in 2014. I'm specifically going to talk about the Anniversary Edition because it adds a bunch of stuff that I think just generally makes the game more interesting. But the original game is still very good if that's all you have. And that is Paperback.
Mm.
Paperback is a deck building game where you are spelling words. And that's basically it. You start with 10 cards in your deck. Like normal, you draw 5. It's a bunch of letters. You form a word with it. It gives you a certain number of points. You use those points to purchase new letters. So on and so forth. You keep doing that until you can purchase fame cards. And then those are going to go into your deck. Those are points. And then eventually the game ends. There are bonuses if you score spell out long words, like 7, 8, 9, 10 letters. And there's ways to do that by upgrading your deck with new cards. So it's Dominion with Scrabble.
Yes.
That's all it is.
That's true.
And that's great. That alone is amazing. I love that. But with the 10th Anniversary Edition, which just shipped out not too long ago from the Kickstarter, they added a bunch of new stuff, right? You have new starting decks that kind of give more variety, like what cards are available to you when you start the game. There's a genre mode that gives tech trees, like different technologies and things you can unlock and build out as you kind of play through the game. There's a deadline variant that kind of shortens the game and gives a certain number of rounds where you're trying to build up to a certain level in a certain amount of time. There's a typo deck now you can throw in there, where if you're like 1 point shy of being able to get what you want, you can take this typo card. It gives you an extra point, but now you have a crappy letter that you have to deal with later. Like, hey, extra point, but now you have a Z.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And if the Z stays in your deck till the end of the game, you don't use it for anything, it's -1 point. And so it's just all this clever new stuff that comes out of 10 years of playing and playtesting and developing. The new solo mode, also fantastic. It's like this little spy mode. You're moving around this track. It's very difficult, which I love. At the end of the day, you're spelling words. But the 10th Anniversary Edition adds a bunch of different ways to mitigate the fact that some people don't like to do that, right? And if you don't like word games, you're not going to like word games. It's fine. But this adds like different ways to kind of work around it. There's more wild options, there's the typo options, there's like the drafting and other ways to get around that and find words that are going to get you points. In a way, like similar like what Scrabble does, where you, like, you don't have to spell a big, long, complicated word. You just got to land on that triple letter score, right? And that's what you want to do. And that's kind of what the game is now doing. It's very quick. It's extremely easy to teach. Like everything I said there at the beginning is pretty much the rules. And then you know what you're doing from there. If you've played a deck building game before, you already know how to play paperback. There was a period of a few years there where I was like, I think I like hardback more.
Yes.
And I've kind of come around to this one again, where it's just the simplicity of it, the ease of teaching it, the accessibility of it for like my family, and now all the extra modes they have in there. Fantastic. And then the cherry on the top, the thing I love probably the most about this game is the artwork. Ryan Goldsberry's artwork of all these different pulp fiction covers. And there's like 30 or 40 of them in there now. They added a bunch more. I have posters in my basement from some of the covers I like the most that I picked up at different conventions. So it's just fantastic. The theming, the artwork, at the end of the day, it's just a word game, but all the stuff that goes around it just makes it so much better. Paperback.
Yeah. You mentioned about if you don't like word games, you don't like word games. And I will admit, I don't like word games. Partially because I have family who are just amazingly sinister when it comes to Scrabble.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it because of a second grade teacher, but we won't get into that right now. But I love this game. I own a copy of paperback. I also own hardback. I don't own this, the 10th anniversary edition, and I wasn't aware of all the extra stuff that comes with it, which sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds like it really opens the game up. And yeah, no, it allows people like me who are not wordsmiths to kind of be able to play and do well, or at least, you know, hold my own.
Yeah, and I think that's what they do really well here, because I've played with people before. They're like, I'm not very smart. And I always hate hearing that in general in life. Like, I'm not very smart. I'm like, of course you are, just not one particular way.
Yeah.
But this game is like, no, let's level the playing field as much as we can. Let's make this accessible to everybody. Now it's more strategic. You're not thinking about the words. You're thinking about how to build things. And that makes it really
fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a great game. Definitely. High recommendation. Mm-hmm. All right. Again, another game that is a high recommendation for me and something that's typically in my bag because I can always get this to the table, because even if it's been a couple of years, the rules are on the boards. It's Dinosaur Island, man. 2017. They had another Kickstarter that had all the extra stuff, including aquatic dinosaurs. And if you are a dinosaur fan, this is the game that you really want to own, because it has all the dinosaurs. And again, with the aquatic edition, it owns all the other dinosaurs. And I do recommend that too, because I think it adds a lot of fun stuff to it. So Jurassic Park in a board game. There's been literal Jurassic Park board games, but this is, for me, what really feels like Jurassic Park, because as I mentioned earlier, the what you have to do in the game, the rules that are in play, the actions that you take each turn are followed pretty precisely by the boards. So you start off with, you have your DNA board, and the DNA board has dice that you roll, and those dice go up there and they depict different DNA, you know, combinations that you're going to be able to pick. And they're like amber colored. So it's awesome. And you have your own player board, which has the different DNA that you have. Three are basic, three are more wild. And then you have spots for security. I'll get into that in a second. Spots for money, because you do have to pay people. Spots for people that you can hire. And then special abilities that you're going to need with your scientist. So you choose the dice, and that becomes the DNA that you're able to put, you know, as far as availability is concerned. But on that first board, there's also the recipes for the different dinosaurs. And there's also options to gain some special abilities from that first board. So you're getting mainly recipes and DNA. You're done. Board two. Now you go into more of, you know, the scientists that come into play and the different actions you take throughout. And it's very, very, very straightforward. And it's one of those things I love about this game, because each of the steps follow. You can play a short game, a medium game, a large game. It gives you all the cards to kind of follow and fit through that. That's also very nice to play throughout. And then now you're actually creating the dinosaurs. You're using the DNA. You have the pattern for the particular dinosaur. Now you get to put them into your particular park. Great. These dinosaurs then draw people in, or sometimes hooligans. Don't ask me why, but it also brings hooligans in who are trying to sneak in. So you're making profit from the park, getting those people in. But of course, you have dinosaurs in the park. So again, dinosaurs are going to cause dinosaur problems. So hopefully your security is up to par, because if it's not, dinosaurs are going to eat people. And that's also so awesome, because it's Jurassic Park. Scientists, security, special abilities that come throughout the game. The special edition comes with a slap bracelet for the first player, which is awesome. And I played it one day and someone took it home and accidentally. It's a lot of fun. The expansions add a lot of other stuff, which again is too long to go into. I don't think you need the expansion necessarily, but again, if you want aquatic dinosaurs, which of course you do, they're a lot of fun. Dinosaur Island, it's like being a kid. It's like playing Jurassic Park, legally distinct, so to speak.
Yeah, this is such a good game. I love it. We have two in a row there where, like, you can teach the game in like 5 minutes. Like,
I love that.
It's all there. Figure it out. We're fine. Let's just go.
Yeah. You put it on the board. Everything's on the board. The cards are pretty clear and straightforward. I love, love, love games that thematically make sense. You get the DNA, you get the patterns for the dinosaurs, you create the dinosaurs, they go into particular parks. Now you have to deal with the dinosaurs. So you do security and all the other stuff that goes along with it. Wash, rinse, repeat. Fantastic. Production is insane. And it has a really cool 80s vibe to it. And Anthony, you're a big Jurassic Park fan, right? This is a Jurassic Park game, right? You played a lot. This is it, right?
Oh yeah, this is there, a bunch of them have tried it, but this is the one that pulls it off the most. And yeah, a little bit of it's like tongue in cheek, like it's borderline satire.
Yes,
but I dig it. Like the '90s vibe is perfect, spot on,
100%.
All right, next up for me, we have another very vibe based game, and this also goes back to that 2017 PAX where we kind of wandered around the first look section and found a million games that were amazing.
A million games.
So this is Obsession, which thankfully at this point everybody's heard of. At the time, nobody had heard of this game, and we stumbled across it. We learned it, we played it. It's designed by Dan Halligan, who is amazing, by the way. If you have not backed any of their Kickstarters, Dan has done an amazing job with Kayenta Games. And it's a game about the mid-19th century Victorian England and trying to build up the fortunes of your family, right? To be able to improve your estate, have the right people on staff, marry off your son or daughter, and find the most eligible person out there. So the game takes place over, you know, a good couple dozen turns, and you are basically renovating your estate. You're getting these different building tiles. You're going to take them each round, either some kind of room or outdoor space. But you also need to get the people that need to operate these things, be able to put on the events. So you need to find the butlers, the housekeepers, the maids, the valets, the footmen, all the different people who are going to enable you to put on the events that are going to happen in these locations. What makes the game really interesting, though, is that each of these different workers kind of has their own mechanics that goes with them in terms of where they, how you place them out, right? The worker play, it's not just worker placement. Each of the workers is unique in their own way and how you bring them in. And so it is just, everything about the game is like, it's Downton Abbey the game, but also
legally distinct.
Yep, definitely legally distinct. But also like Euro. Like it, there's a lot of strategy here, and you can feel it. Like you're making interesting decisions the entire time you play this game. Everything about it, and like I thought I would dislike it, even after we played it, and I was like, that's amazing. I still thought I would dislike it. Like, I don't know. Maybe that was a one time thing. Maybe that was fun the one time. But every time I come back to it, I'm like, man, this is clever. There's so many interesting decisions to be made here. Everything develops organically. It all fits thematically and builds itself like kind of organically over the course of the game. And is always unique because what's available coming out is different. What other people take is going to be different. Like you have that drafting element, but then also like the unique nature of each of the tiles and the workers and how they all come together. Yeah, Obsession is so cool. It's a very fun game. It does things that I have not seen other games do, even when they try to do it. So, well worth checking out.
And I will say more about this in a later episode.
Ooh.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, for me, we're going to take a look at, I would say, one of the modern day classics. It's a game that I've really enjoyed a lot, and utilizes a mechanic that we don't typically see all the time. This is from 2014, Orleans. Craftsmen, scholars, monks, they're trying to help you do things because everything's a bit of a problem. It's the medieval age, so you need as much, you know, faith and friendship to kind of deal with science and construction in medieval France. So what's kind of most notable about the game is the bag building. And the bag building here is these little discs of different types of workers and knights and merchants that come in there, which allows you to take different actions on the board if you are lucky enough to draw the particular craftspeople and politicians and everybody else out there as possible. I remember playing this game for the first time way back when. This is from Clement Franz, and he's done everything great, right? He's been a partner in so many great games like Agricola, Le Havre, or Labora, Caverna, just all the good things out there. And this was a really fun game because typically, again, back in this age, when you played worker placement games, when you put actions out there on the table, it was completely predictable. The bag building element, this like deck building, which was huge at the time, was so much fun because it allowed you to pivot to different areas if you didn't pull the right combination, so you could play out to the board. But also, you did have certainly a plan of action, and you could build up technology that gave you additional spaces to put out your workers there. But primarily, you're going throughout France, you're picking up resources and food, you're dealing with the crises that are happening in medieval France throughout, and it's just a fun progression of a game that goes throughout, of like building up that bag with special abilities, pulling out particular characters and utilize them on your particular tableau, and then racing for special, you know, points and special abilities on the main board. So Orleans, especially with the additional, I don't know, would you say the craft tiles, the buildings that come into play, those buildings are really essential to kind of open the game up a little bit. But I've always enjoyed Orleans.
Always a good game. Yeah, it never quite clicked for me the same way it has for so many other people. But I enjoy it. I'll play it when it comes out, for sure.
Yeah, I haven't played the giant big box expansions. Unfortunately, the game company kind of folded.
Yeah.
So, you know, pour one out for our friends at Tasty Minstrel.
Yeah. Hopefully someone else brings it back out.
Yep.
I think Capstone might have it now.
Oh, good. They're awesome.
Yeah. All right, next up for me is number 55, oldest game on my list this week, and that is Roads and Boats.
Oh!
Roads and Boats.
That's a throwback.
This is a splatter game, so it has things that you'd expect from a splatter game. There are economic elements, there are things you can do to really make your opponents angry. The game is very long, it's kind of messy, the artwork is mediocre.
You're being kind there.
Yeah. No, this is a couple college kids scribbling on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And it has a weird sense of humor, all of which comes together and makes a thing that I find very fun. So in this game, it is essentially, it's a civilization game if you only focused on the economic engine, nothing else, right? So you start the game with donkeys, geese, some boards, and a stone. And you have to try to build that up and generate wealth, get gold and coins, stock certificates, build monuments. So it is the ultimate pick up and deliver game. You are building out this structure and picking everything up and trying to move it to these factories that you're going to build to produce more things, to move to other factories. The box comes with hundreds and hundreds of little bits representing all the different types of goods you can make. There's these complicated charts about like how you can make them and where you can make them and what they can turn into and how you can move them. What makes the game mean, because it's a splatter game, so it needs to be mean, is that the only thing you own is the stuff that you are actively carrying.
Mm.
So if it's in one of your transports on a donkey or in a vehicle, it's yours. If it's not, anybody can swoop in and take it. So if you leave a resource sitting behind, someone else can come take it and use it for their own stuff. If you build a factory, someone else can come use your factory. They can bring the resources and run it. So you have to manage that. And just keep in mind what the goal of the game is. The goal of the game is not to build the most stuff. It's to generate the most wealth. And how do you do that? And where do you move it? How do you store it? Right? There's also a timer built into the game where you're building these different monuments. And once you reach a certain point of those, the game ends. It's such a clever, unique, broken mess of a game that is just a lot of fun. And it is, and this is how messed up and broken it is. It requires this plastic sheet of paper that you put over the hexes. I say piece of sheet of paper, it's just a sheet of plastic, but you put the sheet down and you draw on it to keep track of the routes and where things have moved. And you have to like weigh that down, because if you don't do that, you can't keep track of everything. The tracking in this game is just ridiculous. So they're like, oh, well, how do we get around that? You draw on it. Well, how do we draw on it? I don't know. Put a piece of paper or put a piece of plastic on top of it. I don't know, man. It's just like this perfect combination of dumb little things and fun mechanics in a way that comes into this like very clever, unique economic system that you can absolutely see as the root of their other more complex modern economic games that they built. It's just such a perfect representation of Splatter and what they were going to do over the next 25 years. And I just have fun playing it. I really do. It plays, weirdly enough, you can play this one solo without a lot of issue. Like, you're just building up an engine and seeing how efficiently you can do it. Roads and Boats. Weird game. Great fun.
It is a very weird game, and our friend Dave, from way back in the day, always like swore by it. And it's an odd box, too.
It's really long and really thin, and if you put anything on top of it, the top will like collapse. It's also super out of print, so if you want this game, it's like $250. So,
crazy.
And that's Splatter. The version I have is the 20th anniversary edition, I think. So it has the expansion baked in.
Ooh.
So I don't actually know what's in the expansion, because I have everything just mixed together and I've played with everything. But
gotcha.
I think it's just generally considered good to have that. But you can't find it unless you find this. So
it's true. I have not played it. I have not played it. Wish I did, because again, people really do, like you said, this odd, weird throwback of an obscure enigma of a game. And people are like, no, seriously, it's good. They're just like, all right, yeah, yeah. Because based on that game, right? Based on that box and everything else, for it to survive this long and be this good, it's got to be good. It's got to be.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how to put it. I don't even know if you'd like it, but I didn't think I would like it either, but it works. It's good.
All right. My number 55 is the complete opposite of Anthony's game.
Yeah, it is.
Because, you know, like, Anthony likes to play games, and I like to play some games. From 2014, way back, a favorite of mine and Anthony's, it's not Roads and Boats. It's Arcadia Quest. It's the fun-filled campaign game of dungeon crawling and wacky hijinks with these really adorable little cute chibis. You put together a team of three, with each one having a special ability. Throughout the game, they gear up with special, you know, gear, right? Swords and shields and all of the kind of fun stuff. And you're trying to complete objectives throughout the game. There is a bunch of objectives that are placed out on every particular game. Some of them are things that you can kind of like, you know, chase towards, try to beat everyone else to get a certain thing or knock out enough baddies, because there's a lot of really cool, fun monsters that come out on the board. And there's also an opportunity to actually take out the other players. So that adds an extra level of PvP in the game. So you teleport in, you run around, you steal stuff, you attack other people throughout the game, you try to deal with all the bad stuff. And the campaign system is so brilliant. It escalates so nicely. And the dice rolling, the attacks that come in there, really smooth, really simple, beautiful artwork, beautiful graphic design, great production, a ton of expansions. I think if any game almost ruined us, it was probably this game financially, because once we played this, we wanted to own everything else that came after it. Arcadia to us from 2014, a really great fun time.
Yeah, this game is great. It's a lot of fun. I honestly, I don't think I've played it since Inferno came out.
Sure.
But I still have it. I painted a bunch of them. Like, I think I kept keeping it on my list because I'm like, man, I love that thing. And then once I finally looked, I'm like, I actually haven't played it in a long time. It dropped off, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's the campaign element of it that really makes it hard to get to the table, but you can play one shots for sure.
Yeah, for sure. All right, number 54 for me. Guess who we got back on the list here? Uwe Rosenberg.
I keep hearing this guy's name, and I'm starting to think he's got a thing.
Yeah, at least for games I like. Except for the one that's the most popular.
Well, like. There you go, man. You can't be everything to everybody.
I'll get like 5 or 6 of his games on the list and not include Agricola. Just as a troll to you. Just as a troll.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I've already talked about Agricola, so that's fine. We got it covered as a team.
Cool. Team done.
That's right.
This is basically the sequel to Agricola. Caverna came out in 2013. And I avoided it, actually. Like, it came out, and I was, everybody's like, it's like Agricola, but bigger. And I was like, ew, gross.
Yeah.
I don't want that. Why would I want that game, but longer and more stuff? But it addresses the stuff that I didn't enjoy as much about Agricola. Like, you have a lot more options where you can get a go. Feeding your people is significantly easier. It's definitely not going to put you in the negatives. The points in this game tend to be in the high double digits. I've scored over 100 points several times. And it has a lot of fun elements to it that you don't necessarily have in Agricola. It's a little bit more of a fantasy theme, right? You have these dwarves, they're going on quests, they're interacting with these different things. And that gives the opportunity to bring in expansions where you have other races that you can interact with or play as. You could these more specialty quests you can do. But at the end of the day, it's an Uwe Rosenberg worker placement game. And it has kind of the similar structure of Agricola where you have a not quite timed layout, but pretty close to timed layout of different types of cards that are come out at different points that represent different worker actions you can take. And there's a lot of them, right? Because there's a lot of rounds in the game. So you can get the different things that'll let you mine underground with your dwarves or build out the more traditional farm above ground. You can do all vegetables and stuff, or you can raise animals. You can go on these quests and bring back different resources, or you can stay in your cave the whole time and just build rooms in there. And that's one of the really fun things here, too, is like the rooms and the different synergies there, and there's so many different available. It's not quite the sandbox that Fields of Arl and Feast for Odin ended up being, but it's getting there. You can see Uwe just like being like, more stuff. And this is kind of that next step in that process. So Caverna, lots of fun. It doesn't have the cards, which I think maybe is part of the reason I don't like it. I do like it as much as I do. But the titles are great. And yeah, it's one of my favorites from Mr. Rosenberg.
And for me, Anthony, it's a little bit more of a favorite, so I'll be talking about that in a later episode.
Okay.
There you go. My number 54 is one of my favorite two-player games of all time, and based on one of my favorite board games of all time. This is Seven Wonders Duel back in 2015. This was the reinvention of Seven Wonders. Seven Wonders did have a two-player mode to it, which did not play well. I mean, it's fine, I guess. But Seven Wonders Duel was a game in and of itself. Basically, you are still building up your civilization, but you also have the opportunity at the very beginning to select wonders. These wonders will give you a single special ability if you're able to complete them using different resources, and it gives you kind of a one-shot thing. So no longer are you one civilization. Here you have options as far as what you're able to employ based on the wonders. Now, the actual resources, victory points, military, and science is put together on a tableau, pyramid tableau on the table. Some cards are revealed, some cards are not. So as you take cards from this tableau, other cards open up. These other cards are now available to your opponent. Ah, no! And on top of which, as your opponent builds up certain resources, building certain cards become more expensive for you throughout. As that is going on and as you're building up, sometimes it's the wonders using their special abilities. Sometimes it's the civic cards. These are the blue cards that come into play. You're also dealing with two really fun elements that Seven Wonders is known for. The military, right? You fight your neighbors. Well, instead of fighting your neighbors here, since it's a two-player game, you are dealing with a push and pull kind of track, right? It's like tug of war. You're trying to get the military marker over to your opponent's side. As you move it down the road, they take losses and money. You gain victory points. If you're able to get all the way to one end, you win the game. Stop. Period. Now, if you don't want to go that way, you can go science. Science gives you special ability tokens. Those tokens, as you kind of match them up and you play them to your own particular tableau, whoever gets a certain number of science tokens, they can win the game just from science. If you don't do military, if you don't do science, it all comes down to points. And it all comes down to be one of the best two-player games of all time. Seven Wonders Duel.
I agree, which is why it is higher on my list. We'll talk about it in a future week.
There we go.
All right. Next up for me, number 53. This is a game I didn't know about, honestly, until it just popped up on my... I don't remember where it even popped up. I didn't know it was coming. I didn't know anything about it. And then it just ended up in my house, and I played it, and I was like, this is amazing.
you had Kiknesia?
Yeah, probably. This is the Guild of Merchant Explorers. So it's designed by Matthew Dunstan and Brett Gilbert, who do a lot of games together. And it is effectively a flip and write type of game, except instead of writing, you are dropping cubes onto a map. So it's like an old school, like, explorations type of map, like hand-drawn looking to it. And you start in a location, and then each turn you're going to have one location or one type of thing that comes out or one type of pattern that comes out, an action that you can take, and you're going to move out and take explore actions by dropping these cubes. As you drop the cubes, maybe you'll reach new locations or unlock different abilities or find things on the way, and then you can drop down trading posts, which gives you new locations to build out from in the future. In between rounds, you're going to clear off all those explorers, and now it's just empty again, and you have to continue to explore out from either the original location or a new location in future rounds. You unlock special abilities and scoring actions between rounds. And there's like missions that you're trying to complete. These action abilities that go into your deck and you shuffle them into the cards that you're going to flip over each time through. And so you have these new things that are coming out. So it has like that Tiny Towns feel, but with like this progression to it that you don't have in those other types of games. And it's really that progression that really makes the game so fascinating to me. I wish there was more content, honestly, because there's a handful of different maps and a handful of different approaches you can take. There's not, like, I haven't seen expansions yet. And it's an AEG game. The game's been out for a couple of years. I'm surprised we haven't seen new content yet. But even just with what is there, I've really, really enjoyed it. I've played it dozens of times. Fantastic game solo. But it also works really well with a group because you can kind of look across and see what everybody else is doing. It has that kind of everybody's doing their own thing vibe that like a flip and write type of game does. But you're not writing, you're not rolling. You're doing something much more tactile, which I think is what's missing from those games that a lot of people don't feel. So most of the people I've played this with haven't even realized it's that genre of game until I mention it. They're like, oh yeah, I guess it is one of these. because it just feels like a board game that you're just going through the motions of.
Sure.
So yeah, it's beautiful. It's just a really cool vibe that really builds and evolves on a familiar experience. And I have a blast with it. That is a Guild of Merchant Explorers.
Sadly, this has never showed up on my door. So you have the lucky doorstep. I have not played this, sadly.
Right.
but it looks fun. Looks fun.
It is very fun.
All right. Talking about fun, Anthony, I know a game that you like, maybe by now or maybe later. My number 53. Battlelore second edition. And the second edition is important because the Battlelore second edition is all about the fantasy version of Command and Colors. So we take, you know, Richard Borg's amazing Command and Colors, the cards that come into play to actually control your movement, control your armies, your special abilities throughout the game. And now we have it in the Terranorf universe. For you kids out there, the Terranorf universe was a thing at one point from Fantasy Flight Games, and it's this legally distinct particular IP that they owned, which was all kind of, I don't know, fantasy Lord of the Rings-esque type of factions and just a lot of fun. So it's a two-player game, blue versus red. How about that? It's blue versus red. You have the humans because, I don't know, they got to be humans in the game. And then you got the different monsters that come into play because, you know, monsters and such. This game has a number of expansions that allows you to put different, you know, allies and monsters into play. So you choose which side you want to play. Typically, you decide on how many points you're playing. So that allows you to field a particular army onto the board. And then the game itself, obviously, is you're trying to knock out the opponent, but you're also really focused on trying to achieve particular goals in the game that allow you to score action points, like Memoir 44, but with magic and creatures. And it's fun, it's dynamic, and each of the characters have special abilities. And it's one of my favorite games that has disappeared and no longer in print, which is tremendously sad. And you should somehow try to find a way to play it. And if not, come find me and we'll play it together because it's a lot of fun. And the app is not bad too, especially when it came out. Battlelore, second edition.
Yeah, wonderful game. Yeah, this is like I mentioned before, smartphone dropped to 101. This is like 102 on the list.
Yeah.
Last time we did the list, this was like number 99, 100. And it's purely because I haven't been able to get it played very much.
Sure.
I have everything for it.
Don't rub that in, man. Don't rub that in.
I will rub it in every time.
Oh, so bad.
I have to, man.
There's no elves. Why is there no elves? That's right. I'm bringing back this argument if you listen way, way back when. I'm bringing this back. Why there's still no elves?
Yeah, it is dumb what we do have. We have humans, we have undead, and we have demons.
Why?
What the snot? Yeah, where are the elves? Where are the dwarves? Where, like, there's other... Come on.
Come on. Rune Wars did it. Come on.
Yeah.
same game. Same universe.
Right. Fantasy Flight gives up quick on things, but this was particularly quick. So.
And it was very good.
It was very good. It's a shame.
Oh, no. So good.
So much good Terranoth stuff, and they give up on all of it so quickly.
Yeah, it's that Star Wars license that was like, Star Wars?
Yeah. Like, I get that made some money, but you know what made a lot more money? Star Wars.
You kids are nice with your little IP that you created there. We're just going to bring the Force in here, and you're going to do it, right? Like, I guess. Yeah,
Star Wars? You want Star Wars?
Star Wars? Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's great. I'm going to hold on to it. Like, when I was clearing out stuff over the summer, I was like, no, I'm keeping this forever. But I don't know if I'll ever play it. So, it's just sitting there in the box.
Gotcha.
All right, number 52 for me. I mentioned my theme this week is mashups. This is another big mashup. City of the Big Shoulders.
Oh.
This was our game of the year back in 2019. It is a pretty much straight up mashup of 18XX and Arkwright. The designer has even said as much. So you are playing an entrepreneur in Chicago after the Great Fire, and you are trying to build up a company. Right. And a lot of these companies represent real world companies and the companies you're trying to hire workers for and you're trying to operate them. But you're also trying to increase the value of the stock of that company because you do not actually own the company. You are just invested in it. So you have this element of 18XX where you are operating a company without necessarily owning it, meaning you're trying to extract value from it and then maybe drop it off somewhere along the way. But you also have to hire workers, manage those workers, automate those workers if you can, just to be as efficient as possible with how you build up that company. There's also worker placement elements to it. So you're not just running these things. You are taking these actions with your workers that will give you additional abilities, new workers, new resources. You need to take these different types of resources from the market, which is often limited what's available. So the competition that you're up against will determine what resources you can get to feed into your factory to produce the goods that you need to generate the money. There's a lot of moving parts here, but it streamlines a lot of what makes games like Arkwright so overwhelming, right? That's a game, like I said, it could take 5 to 6 hours. City of the Big Shoulders advertises itself as 2 to 3 hours, and that's actually fairly close to accurate. This is a 3-hour game, and that might seem like a lot, especially for a 4-weight game, but when you add it all up, it's about half the length of another game of kind of the similar ballpark. This game kind of disappeared for a while. They were supposed to reprint stuff. There was expansion content. It was also supposed to get reprinted. It kind of just kind of faded away. But you can play it online, Board Game Arena. It's on Tabletop Simulator. And I know they are finally getting ready to reprint it as well. If you want a big, heavy economic Euro game, but you don't want to go down the route of like the brutally challenging 18XX or even Arkwright, City of the Big Shoulders is, it's not an entry level. Definitely not entry level, but it's like a level 2 or level 3, if those are like level 4 and level 5. So fantastic game. Lots of interesting decisions to be made and a great stepping stone to like the bigger, heavier brain churning your stuff.
Yeah, it as you mentioned, this is kind of like half 18XX and half Arkwright. And yeah. After, like, again, I have not played either one of those and did not necessarily have an interest in playing either one of those. And then after playing this, I was just enamored by it. And I was just like, maybe I would be interested in 18XX. Maybe I would be interested in Arkwright because this has got some serious crunch to it, but it really plays very smoothly. And I'm pretty surprised by that.
Yeah, that whole mechanic of like owning stock in companies that you may or may not operate is such a cool mechanic that can be extremely overwhelming if you do it too close to simulation level, right?
Yes.
Like the really tight stock markety type of games like 18XX, that's a lot. You really have to want to go down that road. This game doesn't push you all the way down that road. It just kind of introduces you to it. And I think that's why it's so popular.
Got it. And it reminds me also of, like, again, Imperial.
Yeah.
Imperial 2030, where
sure.
coming out of the Euro game tradition, like, I played a lot of Euro games. I know how to play this game. This looks like a Euro game. And like, what do you mean I don't have a company? What do you mean I don't,
yeah.
I don't have a country that I'm controlling? Like, what do you mean I am basically building it up to break it down and then sell it off and buy something? Like, you really have to wrap your brain around it. But it's fun when you do.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The oligarchy, friends. It's fun to play in board game format. Less fun in the real world.
It is all a game. That's why they do it, right?
Like, it's true.
They're just capable of forgetting that they're moving people around, not pawns.
I mean, we talk about on the academic side, so we'll take one brief second to talk about it, right? If you want to understand the cognitive dissonance that people have in certain levels of society to, like, take a beloved company or organization and just manipulate it to the point where they squeeze all of the life out of it and then discard it, these games will teach you why that's a thing.
Yep. Yep. You can literally suck all the value out of a company, suitcase it, and drop it off on someone else to bankrupt them.
Yeah.
That is what these games allow you to do. And it's fun. It's fun to do in a game. So
I can't wait to see the Asmodee version of that.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened to them.
That is literally what's happening right now.
Yeah. Fun times, kids. Board games. Woo! Yeah. All right. Well, speaking about board games, that will keep you up at night because it reflects the cultural decline and corruption of our society. Clinic Deluxe. I mean, you know, 2019, it's Album Villard and Ian O'Toole, the greats. Album Villard has talked about this game as a reflection of the healthcare system his wife works in. And again, this is the new version. This is the deluxe version. And again, don't get confused with the original version. This is not just deluxe because it has nicer pieces. It is absolutely streamlined. The rules have been rewritten. It offers rules for beginners and experts. There's a solo variant. Like, it offers a lot of things that makes this game playable. If you see a picture of this game, you will say, dear goodness, this is not playable, right? Like, it's just way too much. It looks like too much. It feels like too much. You play the game, and Album Villard has his geniuses come into play to make the game so very thematic that it is playable, but it will still burn your brain. Not to worry, you're working in the healthcare system. They will take care of that after a deductible. But what you're trying to do here is, you have started up this hospital, and of course your friends have also started up their hospital. That's really bad for them because you're going to build the best hospital possible. But what kind of clinic are you going to build? So you have opportunities to build up different rooms in your clinic. And also there's a spatial element to it. So you have to deal with that because your patients have to be able to get in and out, and you're going to deal with a lot of different patients that have a lot of different problems. And the secret to the game, which is really sad, but also very true at the same time, if your patients get sicker, they're worth more points.
Ah. I love it, but I hate it.
So you want to let your patients get sicker because then it's worth more money for you to build more stuff on your hospital and score more points. But again, there's a lot of expansions. There's a sickening number of expansions to this game.
Nah.
See what I did there? And you can add a lot of those different components to make the game different each and every time. Again, a ton of different combinations, like down to zombies and fire extinguishers. I enjoy this game a lot. It's definitely playable, and you definitely feel like you are accomplished when you do so. And once you build up that, like, clinic and you watch the patients run through it, you really do feel accomplished whether you win or lose.
Yeah. This was on my list 2 weeks ago at number 76. And it is VR's most complex game from, like, a weight perspective. Just because you have to keep track of so many things.
Yeah.
And that's one reason I love it. But also that social commentary that he manages to bake in here. He's a clever, funny guy. And the game really reflects that. Maybe not the 69 expansion.
No. Too far.
Very clever. But everything else, very clever.
Two on the nose. Everything else is great.
Yeah. All right. Last one for me this week. I have another splatter game. They both ended up in the same chunk here. Food Chain Magnet. This is my number 51, and it came out in 2015. First time I played it in 2016, which was well after you played it and reviewed it. And I was like, ooh, what is this game? Where is it? How do I find it? I hated it. the first time I played it. I had a terrible experience. I didn't quite understand what I was supposed to do. I made several mistakes in the first 45 minutes, and then I had to sit there for 3 more hours and just get annihilated. I ended the game with positive money, but not by much. So it was not great, but the game stuck with me. It was stuck in my brain. I could not stop thinking about it for like a week. And the next week, I'm like, we have to play this again. And I still lost, but I did better because I understood what I was supposed to do. And the thing about splatter games that I love so much is everything's out there. Everybody can see everything, right? There's like a piece of hidden information in this game. It's just like what card you played to determine like game length, right? What your vote was for that. Everything else is out there and open, and everything, like what you hide is what's in your head, what your strategy is, what you plan on buying, what you plan on advertising, how you plan to kind of manipulate and mess with the market. And this game, it's just such a great representation of how that operates, right? Like I'm gonna advertise, you know, like, oh, I produce burgers and lemonade. This is great. I'm all set up. And somebody just like undercuts you and messes with the advertising or pushes things in a certain direction that you can't fulfill. You know, I'm like, aha, I got, you know, a radio ad and you're in trouble now. or like you build up your org chart to go in a certain direction. Then all of a sudden you're like, I can't, producing pizza is useless to me. And I have 3 people who produce pizza. I need to get rid of these people now so I can bring in other people. But that takes like 3 rounds and all of a sudden you're way behind. So you have to think ahead and think backwards and pay attention to what everybody else is doing at the same time. And you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do. You get outplayed, but that's what I love about it. It's strategic to the point where it's not bad luck. It's not a bad draw. It's not somebody else got lucky, got what they needed and you didn't. It's that they outplayed you. They outthought you. They outmaneuvered you in a way, right? And yes, there's maybe 3 other people at the table. And so sometimes you get outmaneuvered by accident. And that's a little frustrating. But the more you play it, the more opportunity you have to really like excel at the game because of the skill that you've developed playing the game. Expansion, a ton of amazing content, but this is based purely on the base game because I have not played the expansion very much. What I have played is fantastic. It adds more variability, it opens things up a little bit, better decision making. But just the base game with the clear, tight decision tree that you have to follow and the different paths to complete and utter failure and how you have to kind of manipulate and maneuver around that. Food Chain Magnet, there are a few games that are this interactive and this mean that I like, because I don't like being upset at the table, but I don't really get upset in this game. I'm just more fascinated. I'm like, oh my gosh, that was a great, like, you got me. Like, I didn't see that coming. It's like the same feel I have playing like a Twilight Imperium where like, oh, that stinks really hard for me, but that's impressive what you just pulled off there. And that's how I feel playing Food Chain Magnet.
This had been on my list for several years, and I think this might have been like 101. And the reason why I kind of bumped it back, because as you mentioned at the start, Anthony, this is a game that will beat people up.
Yeah.
And people do, and I've played this game and people have had a bad time.
Oh, sure.
And it's, again, it's not, the game is not bad. The game is one of the best, honestly, one of the best games of all time. It's just a great game. But you will be bruised and beaten, you know, if you do not make certain choices early on, and sometimes if you do not get lucky, right? If certain people just kind of pile up in your area, or if everyone's selling pizza, as you mentioned, then you're going to have a bad time. You really have to pivot hard. Yeah. I will say the catch-up mechanic, the expansion for the game, does open the game up and does make it a lot more flexible. So you don't feel like you're going to be, you know, smashed if you don't do the right thing early on. But it's one of the best games because it's hard. I don't know if long term if the expansion does work to its benefit or its harm, but it does add a lot of extra cool stuff. So I'd love building that little org chart up of all the different the workers. That's so much fun.
And it is one of my favorite game mechanics, period.
And the throwback to the 50s look is great.
It's so weird, too, because this is the first splatter game I played. I was like, oh, this is cool. It's a nice vibe. And then every other one after that, I'm like, what is this? What are they doing? What is this nonsense? Visually, what is this?
And this got a super deluxe version by Lucky Duck Games, and it did not need it because it did really fit the theme and it was really cool as it is. But again, if you picked up the super deluxe version, more power to you, man.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's going to be a big, stupid box. It doesn't fit anywhere. that's how we roll.
That was a very good episode. I like that episode a lot. People need to listen to that episode.
I know. Yeah, yeah. Go find those. I got two more of them in, like, since we started recording this. Andromeda's Edge and the Teotihuacan Deluxe Edition. I'm like, what am I doing? Why did I do this?
I literally had a counseling session with you. I'm like, you will fit it back in the box. You will be able to fit it back in the box.
It's like bulging like 2 inches above the lid.
You're like, no.
Stupid box.
All right. Well, my final game here, and, you know, still a very good game, because this is one of those games that it's a genre that I generally don't like to play. So when a game does that genre so very well and in a very smart way, I enjoy it all the time. And I played this recently a couple times. This is Citadels from way back in 2000. Obviously, they reprinted it back in 2016. It's a lot more prettier. Bruno Fathudi. This is a social deduction game. At least one of the elements is social deduction. And you're not targeting players, although you kind of are. But really what you have to target is roles. So in there's a lot of different roles that you can play in this. You can play put out in the game that people can select. But primarily, you have the assassin. The assassin's going to take out a particular character. So you're not targeting a person, targeting a character. There's the thief. The thief can steal from a particular character. Again, not the person, it's the character, so they have to guess. And then there's a lot of other really cool people that come into place. The warlord destroys buildings, the bishop protects the buildings, there's an architect, there's a merchant, there's a king. And what you're building is your citadel. You're building this wonderful set of buildings. You're trying to build 7 buildings. Whoever builds 7 buildings, the game comes to an end. Each building costs gold. Each of those buildings, the gold cost adds to your point value. Based upon the particular scoring, you know, that comes into play, you want to build a diversity that comes into play. There's special purple buildings that give you special abilities throughout play. I've really enjoyed this game for so many years because it is a small economic building game, city building game that is not hard, right? It needs X number of gold. Try to get those gold so you can be able to build that building. Get more cards. Cool. And that's pretty much it. It's fun. It has that drafting mechanic that allows you to give it some information about what other people are doing, but maybe not enough to make the best decision every time. Citadels. 2000, 2016, they're all awesome.
Citadels.
It's true.
It's good. This is, again, like you mentioned, it's one of the rare ones that you enjoy in this genre. Same.
Yeah.
Like, I think I don't hate this genre, but I do avoid it enough that the game not going to move it up onto my list, but it's one of those games that I would gladly play anytime someone pulls it out. I have fond memories of it, and I've had good experiences playing it generally compared to a lot of the other games that fit this mold.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to build the buildings. There's a lot of ways that special characters come into play. There's in the box is a diversity of characters, so you don't have to play with the assassin or the thief. You can play a more economic kind of friendly game, so to speak. It's just a lot of fun. It's a great game. And, you can play with a lot of people too. I think that's one of those things too, right? The more people you play with, the more roles that come into play. So that's fun.
Yeah.
Citadels. All right, everyone, there you go. Our top 60 to 51 amongst our top 100 games of all time. We are so grateful that you joined us here this week. Next week, number 50 to number 41. So until next time, this is Chris.
And
we'll see you all at the table. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.